ESPN LA Kamenetsky Brothers Podcast, Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. Andy, it's like news. We've got actual news to cover for the Lakers.
Thursday, August 24th. Mark that as the day. Things actually happen for the Lakers.
And it's somewhat scary news. It's probably not. It's tampering, Andy.
Mm-hmm.
We always complain, Andy, that Mitch Kupchak was the last honest general manager in the NBA, and he wouldn't tamper.
Yeah, I remember Ramona Shelburne had a big piece about, you know, sort of the state of the Lakers after Mitch and Jim were blown out. And one of the complaints internally within the front office, or sort of, I guess, the perception of the Laker front office was basically they don't engage in the same shenanigans that the rest of the league does.
If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. Apparently, they weren't trying. That's all I'm saying. And so the new guys are definitely trying. And so the Indiana Pacers, by now most people know the story. Indiana Pacers have filed a little while ago, I guess it just only came out in the last week or so, a formal complaint to the league against the Lakers. It is being investigated by a very impressive sounding law firm, and they are...
It's Robert Mueller.
It's being pulled off the Russia thing. And so...
Well, this is much more important.
It is.
This is about something that matters. I mean, you know, whether or not the Lakers can get Paul George moving forward, I mean...
Let's be honest. Andy, he's probably not going to get impeached. He's going to be here for 4 years, whatever. Summer of 2018 is rolling up fast.
Well, also, too,
think,
I mean, look,
man.
Am I saying that it's acceptable or admirable to potentially conspire with a foreign adversary to, you know, sway an election? No, but it's still not as important as this.
It's not going to determine whether or not our guys are going to win a title.
Exactly.
Next
I mean, look, I mean, if Paul George isn't here, LeBron may not be here.
We've suffered through the rebuilding process longer than we've suffered through this administration.
That's true.
So
that's true.
Let's take care of things in steps. So people know about what's going on. The Pacers have filed a formal complaint, and it is somewhat kind of just spiteful. I mean, Indiana's not going to get anything out of this other than to put the Lakers kind of in their place, and the small market teams are all with them, and it's a very rah-rah thing. Chances of this being... actually proven are virtually zero.
Yeah, these tampering cases, generally speaking, unless you were dumb enough, I guess, to leave an obvious paper or digital trail, and I guess what could make
Magic's
some
new at this.
I was just about to say what could make Laker fans very nervous is we don't actually know yet how good Magic and Pelinka are at tampering. Like, there's no evidence. Like,
no, that's true.
Like, Pat Riley, for example, we know is amazing at it. We know Pat Riley can tamper with the best of them. We don't know yet what Magic and Pelinka are capable of doing.
And so,
successfully.
Right. And so there are really two questions here. Because the last time this was a big thing was Joe Smith in 2000, and the league dropped the hammer on the Timberwolves, cost them the money was incidental, but cost them 5 first round picks. It's not that I'm worried about that happening here, but if it did, like the potential impact under the sort of nuclear scenario here, and the league would crack down hard on the Lakers if there were some sort of, you know, video of Magic and Paul George house hunting while sticking pins in a Herb Simon doll or something, like that would cost them. I have two questions. The first one is this. Do you think, in letter of the law terms, the Lakers have tampered when it comes to Paul George?
Yes.
I agree.
I mean, in the same way that all 29 other teams, including the Indiana Pacers, have engaged in tampering.
Yes.
They all do
all
this. They
do
all
it in
engage
one
in back channels.
Yes.
The back channels. You know, it depends. I would be very curious, and I'm sure this is what the Robert Mueller and the gang are investigating right now, is the degree to which they did this. You know, like, for example, the Pacers apparently think that the Lakers were in contact with Paul George's parents.
Right, which is how you do it. Apparently, that's how you do it in L.A. Like, you go back to the Reggie Bush thing. Like, you just get in touch with people's moms and dads and
like,
you do it that way.
If that's something that the Lakers did, that is engaging in, as my understanding of how the tampering game works, that's really towing yourself up to the edge. Like, that's
Look, if Magic is rolling up with Mr. and Mrs. George and getting all sweet with them and whatever, and using them as some sort of intermediary. First of all, it's dumb. Everybody knows the Lakers want Bob. So this gets to my second question, because I think
also worth noting too. I mean, you know, the Jimmy Kimmel appearance with Magic and the wink, you know, which was both a joke, but also a knowing joke, and something that the Pacers did not find funny at all. It's not the
nor should they.
It's not the centerpiece of this investigation.
But it's part of what got Indiana going.
But what people also forget about, I had forgotten until this tampering thing came up, is that Paul George was also on Kimmel himself. And Jimmy Kimmel was playing up the whole, you're going to be a Laker, you're going to be a Laker. And Paul George didn't really downplay it. You know, he said he loved Indiana, but he didn't really do anything to dispel this. And from Indiana's perspective, it's annoying. But if you're paranoid, or maybe even right, about, you know, tampering that goes beyond, you know, what we just look the other way from in the NBA.
The normal stuff that it's very similar to the arrangement that Nick and Iggy had.
Right.
Don't make me look stupid.
Paul George's appearance on Kimmel might feel to you like a tacit admission of what's going on.
Sure. Look, all of these, the Magic thing on Kimmel was sort of harmless broadly, but also stupid.
Yes, it was.
Shouldn't have done it.
Yes, it was.
And it wouldn't surprise me at all if the Lakers get fined, and they probably will for that. And
probably should. Yeah.
So everyone agrees that tampering is a thing that happens
in
one form or another. The players collude all the time. That's different. This, though, my question here, should it matter? Tom Zilla wrote an interesting thing for SB Nation where basically his position was no, because everyone knows Paul George is going to be a free agent. Everyone knows Paul George is interested in coming back home. Everyone knows the Lakers would be interested in George because they're interested in all these guys, and they've cleared the decks in 2018 specifically for this reason. So if the Lakers are kind of doing some recruiting for a guy that they know wants to come anyway and all these other things, does it matter? Should it matter? His position was essentially no, I don't agree.
I feel like yes and no. Like, no, in the sense that what Zilla laid out, what you just described, I mean, we're all adults here. Everybody knows that this is happening. And, you know, for the time being, players are apparently allowed to just openly talk about recruiting other players.
I don't think they're supposed to.
But they do.
They're allowed.
Players talk on the record about how, you know, during the All-Star break, I'm going to be recruiting this guy who's under contract. And whether they are formally allowed to or not, they're allowed to because they don't actually get penalized for doing it. So in that sense, no, it shouldn't matter because, again, everybody knows what's going on. The flip side that I would say, yes, it should matter, is in the sense that if you're going to be manipulating the CBA so small markets can theoretically gain advantages and be able to keep their guys, and if the NBA is going to rescind deals where Paul George goes to the Lakers because of basketball reasons, hashtag never forget, you're going to bother trying to keep these markets in the game and in the league in the first place, then there's a vested interest in keeping the field as level as possible. I'm not even trying to take up for these small market teams. I think, like, for example, David Stern's quest to keep the NBA in New Orleans was stupid and I think often very counterproductive to the league as a whole. But if you're going to be doing this stuff, if you're going to be setting up the CBA certain ways for small market teams, then the tampering does matter because we're putting ourselves through all this efforting for nothing.
Right. It's just one of these things where a certain amount of it is unavoidable. A certain amount of it is understandable. I'll use the Iggy example again. Like I'm sure that Iggy might have known that maybe Nick was straying here and there or whatever it might be. And there are people who have that, like, in their relationship where the number one rule is don't make me look stupid. Don't make me look bad by doing this. The league understands that it can't police every communication between, you know, an executive and an agent and the back channel stuff and the 11 billion different ways that guys can communicate with each other and teams can get a message out. Don't make me look stupid. Don't make it blatant to where it's very obvious that you are messing with a player under contract with another organization. If you, if that happened in any walk of life, and the, you know, people have agreements where, you know, you sign contracts where you leave, you know, Boeing, you can't just walk into
McDonnell Douglas.
Do they still exist? Are they still a thing? But you know, you leave Boeing, you can't go to Airbus.
To high school with their daughter,
right? They're rich.
They were quite very rich. Very nice, though.
Very nice.
Very rich.
Stupid rich. Yeah, you know, you can't just, a lot of times you can't just leave Boeing and go work for Airbus or whatever. You know, there are non-compete clause. These, you know, Paul George is everything to the Indiana franchise. To have another team come mess with your guy while you're paying him, you just can't have it. And so if they did something blatant here, you have, it should matter. I mean, the little stuff, the ticky-tack stuff on the side, the implications, the, even the winking on Jimmy Kimmel, okay. But real blatant stuff, there has to be a line somewhere.
But you know what,
that you just can't cross.
The wink-wink thing on Jimmy Kimmel, whether it actually speaks to what's gone on behind the scenes, like tampering that actually crosses what's been considered the acceptable line in the NBA, it does reflect an arrogance on Magic's part.
Oh, completely.
It's a total arrogance.
He was being Magic.
Right.
He wasn't being the president of the Lakers.
Exactly. There's an arrogance to it, and arrogance can lead to sloppiness and mistakes, and it can also lead to resentment, you know, around the league, or in particular this case, the Indiana Pacers. But I was thinking, like, regardless of what comes from, you know, whatever Mueller and the gang discover, moving forward, it probably wouldn't kill Magic and Pelinka to chill on the 24/7 two max free agents in 2018 talk. Like, at this point, we get it. The other 29 teams get it. Mm-hmm. Every player in the league gets it. You don't want to be obnoxious about it or, like,
got the Chris Paul thing overturned.
A reek of exceptionalism, particularly, too, when you're a front office that hasn't done anything yet. Like, and also, too, you leave yourself open to these type of interpretations, mm-hmm. that this is what you're doing. You know, that, like, when you're on the phone with Aaron Mintz, you know, theoretically or ostensibly about Julius Randle, you know, maybe talking the extension, that, you know, in reality,
D'Angelo Russell trade, whatever.
Right. Or that, you know, when you're talking with Rich Paul about KCP, I mean, everybody knows that KCP offers you, you know, the through line to.
Right. And when they
vague
show,
LeBron
when,
talk.
When Pelinka introduces KCP at the press conference and they both spend time and they thank Rich Paul profusely and they talk about KCP as if he was an actual pope.
Yeah.
Like with that kind.
No,
like,
he was literally described as the bread the Israelites got.
Manna from heaven.
Right.
That life-sustaining bread.
That bread was really important, man.
Saved the Israelites as they walked. God saved. He's a decent two guard. He's going to help them defensively. He ain't manna from heaven, for God's sakes. They went from signing KCP means they went from winning 30 games to 32 games. That's not manna from heaven.
No.
LeBron.
Yes.
LeBron, that's manna. You know, that's manna from heaven.
Either way, I think it would actually be a good idea for Pelinka and Magic to chill on this stuff.
We're next offseason. 11 mid-level exception players. The Lakers are going to clear the decks for as many mid-level exception players as we can get. I'm not sure if that's legal or in the rules. We're going to sign 11 $7 million players and do it that way. And then you throw everybody off your trail. Big trade this week, Andy, that could impact the Lakers. Kyrie Irving headed to Boston. Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder and that Nets pick headed to
Zizic. People who know overseas...
I have him in my keeper league.
People who know overseas players, and you and I don't, but we read about this stuff, they say Zizic can play.
He could be good. He looked terrible in summer league, I will say. Terrible. But...
You know, so did Zubats, and we're all convinced he can play.
Not so much anymore. We're not all Mike Trudell. So this is obviously one of these earth-shattering, you know, this is a big deal.
These type of trades, forget the stars involved, the teams involved.
Yes.
I mean, this doesn't happen.
No, the two teams that met in the Eastern Conference Finals traded their star players, and by the way, meet on opening night.
This does not happen, man.
I don't like the winners and losers construct, hot takey construct that we always look at these
but
things.
But let's
through.
Do it.
Who won, Andy, and who lost the trade? Everybody got, I think, what they needed out of this deal. Cleveland, I think, I like Cleveland's side of it better.
So do I.
From what's on paper. But we'll get to Boston here in a second. Cleveland, I think, did a great job, assuming Thomas is healthy, of hedging for the departure of LeBron while making it more possible to keep LeBron.
Yeah.
You know, so I they're probably better, I think, with Isaiah and Jay Crowder.
I agree.
Than with just
I agree. Particularly,
neither one, it should be remembered. Let's remind people: neither one of us believe Kyrie really, truly belongs in that
no.
upper echelon of
amazing,
elite players.
Amazing score, very one-dimensional score.
Yes,
and does I mean really does not unless he's just in the mode. Doesn't right. really bring much else.
So
to
some
table.
Of the, a lot of the reaction to this trade is Andy is just and by the way, really a referendum on what you think of Kyrie.
And by the way, too, you know who else happens to be an amazing scorer? Isaiah Thomas.
Right.
You know, he's the best he was the best fourth quarter scorer in the league last year.
He is, to be fair, and actually one of the people in the league, and there aren't many, who was worse at defense than Kyrie.
Yes, he is.
And some of that's just because he's 3.5 feet tall. And like it's just only Kyrie's a much bigger guy. But, you know, they do get Crowder, who makes up for some of that, and, you know, an interesting big man in Zizic, and that pick, which could be foundational, and LeBron can look at it and say, we went to the finals. IT can stay. He's healthy. We can bring him on. We get this young guy. We got so it works really well for them on that level in terms of maybe making it more possible LeBron could stay. And for that, it's a winner, especially when you consider if he goes, they set themselves up pretty well. You let Thomas walk.
I would not
re-sign Isaiah Thomas into his 30s to a max deal.
I probably wouldn't either, but
I wouldn't.
I
love Isaiah Thomas.
I do too, but I doubt I'd do it either. But I mean, the possibility is there that if you want a name guy who will be an absolute crowd favorite,
sure,
you know, an all-star caliber crowd favorite, you know, last year was an all MVP caliber player. You know, you have him there and you bring out the Brinks truck that Isaiah Thomas has clearly
right.
said
and by the
expecting.
Way, he might not get it.
No.
Just because you ask for it doesn't mean you're going to get it because there are so few teams that have cap space. And most of them, I think like I would, which is that's not a max deal I want to get. But even if you don't give him, I don't know what max for him would be. If you gave him 85% of the max or 80% of the max, that's still going to be a bleep ton of money.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this just has to do with, you know, what type of market there's there, right. You know, the opportunities you could have. It's interesting to, I don't know, I mean, it remains to be seen what, if anything, this deal does with keeping LeBron in Cleveland. I mean, there's some people who think he's gone no matter what. But at the very least, he saw their new GM, Kobe Altman, pull off a hell of a
yes.
deal from a position of disadvantage. So that, at the very least, has to make LeBron say, okay, I'll think about it more, or I'll, at the very least, I will be open to watching
this guy
what's
knows
happening.
What he's doing.
I will be open to watching what's happening, even if I'm going to end up leaving. This also, too, I imagine, is going to, one of the reasons that I thought Cleveland had, there was a good chance Cleveland actually wasn't going to get to the finals this year, is because there seemed to be like a lot of tension that would be hanging over this locker room, not just because of LeBron's potential exit, but because of this feud going
on. Apparently, there are reports they did not speak; they weren't speaking to each other during the playoffs. You can't have that.
Isaiah Thomas, to my understanding, is known for being good in
the
locker room.
Well, I mean, there are reports now coming out that, you know, and then I saw on Twitter, like Olynyk and Sullinger, right, that Thomas wasn't well liked in his life. But you know what? Even if he wasn't, whenever these guys change locker, there's always a year where they get along.
Sure, exactly. I mean, I guess you're right. I guess I've heard both before.
And
I mean,
in Sacramento, supposedly he was difficult.
But then again, having difficulty with
booking. He was also trying to play.
Right.
And he was it's different now because back then the troubles supposedly that he caused is I think he understood that he was better than people that were playing in front of him.
It's also, I mean, look, neither one of us know Isaiah Thomas, but it's hard for me to imagine a guy that can suit up the day after his sister dies and play the way he did being just an atrocious locker room guy.
Yeah,
and I could be completely wrong.
And I think we have a natural bias too that little people,
sure,
are just, you know,
we're among them.
Right, we're easy to get along with.
Yeah, but I mean, either way though, I would figure this helps a chemistry issue in Cleveland's locker room. I mean, it doesn't solve everything.
It does. Well, look, I don't know if it helps the chemistry issue or hurts the chemistry. It's not going to hurt it, because if your two stars weren't talking to each other, it doesn't really get much worse than that.
Right.
So I think, though, from the LeBron perspective, it might require Magic to go back on Kimmel. Because this does enough good stuff for Cleveland that they might have to take the chance and go ahead and openly recruit LeBron on Kimmel soon. From Boston's perspective,
Magic
though,
did send him a happy birthday tweet.
It's true. They have four.
Or the reverse. Was it the reverse? Did LeBron send it to Magic, or Magic send it to LeBron?
I don't remember.
They're both tampering.
To quote my five-year-old, I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
This is Boston has four guys left on the team from last year. Like, they went to the Eastern Conference Finals. They have four players left on that team. It's like, and it only one of them, one or two, I guess, depending on how you think of Smart. It's like it's Smart, Horford, Terry Rozier, who's now a much more important player, and Jaylen Brown.
Yeah,
that's it. Everybody else is gone. And they used to have this identity as like a defensive bulldog that couldn't score. Now everybody has that basically reversed. They're going to score a ton of points with Hayward and Kyrie, and Tatum lit it up in the summer league. Clearly,
he looked good. Jaylen Brown looked good.
He did. He looked like you're supposed to look in your second year, which is better than everybody. They got guys who can put up points, and now people wonder if they can defend. But I like this for them too, because now it gets them out of the question of do you have to re-sign Isaiah after next year, and you get 2 years with Kyrie at less money than Isaiah would have cost you next year. I don't love Kyrie as a player, but a lot of people do, and he certainly is the type of number one scorer, given the ball in the fourth quarter, can isolate, create shots, whatever, and all that kind of stuff, who fits, I think, really neatly next to somebody like Gordon Hayward.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, actually. I heard Lebatard talking about this when he and the guys were breaking down the trade, and he mentioned something really interesting. Like, Kyrie's, you know, reputation, we've seen it. You know, he's an amazing scorer. He is among the best finishers at the basket
I've
ever seen.
And may have the best handle in the league,
He is an unbelievable scorer, but we've never seen how efficient and effective a scorer he can be at this level without LeBron. And whenever you are on the court with LeBron, I mean, even take into account playing with Gordon Hayward, playing with Al Horford, that's a good supporting cast. It's not LeBron.
No,
it's going to be interesting.
Well, no, you've seen kind of what he was. When LeBron didn't play, the team was bad.
Let's say those teams were garbage, and Kyrie was really early in his career.
No, I mean,
so you want,
last year when Kyrie played without LeBron,
the numbers were bad. Yes.
I'm not going back to Byron
Scott.
No,
you're correct. You're correct. My last
couple seasons.
So it'll be interesting to see how good Kyrie actually is.
Well, I think the thing that plays into Boston's favor, and we'll move off this in a second, I do think one thing that plays in Boston's favor, he's going to be kind of, I think, hyper aware of the criticism against him as a player and the noise he made to get out of Cleveland about wanting to be the man and wanting to be, and that means doing all the stuff.
I don't know. The flip side of that argument is Russell Westbrook heard basically all the same things and turned into a one-man machine.
On a team without the same kind of support. And while doing that, averaged double digits.
No, I get that. But the point being, though, it could have gone the opposite direction with Russ, too. It could have gone in a different direction.
It could have. This year, I think, is a better test of that than last year because he's got better players around.
It'll be interesting to see. I tend to think
if Russ's usage rate is 72 again this year, we'll know he's.
Well, I mean, look, with Kyrie, I tend to think you're right about the way he's going to play. But if you ask me if I think it's out of the question that he wants to show exactly what was being held back by LeBron, no, I don't.
I agree with that. He's going to score. He's going to go out and score a bunch of points. I just mean I think he'll try a little bit more on defense. I think he'll move the ball a little bit more and all that kind of stuff. And then it becomes, this is one of those situations too where you look at Brad Stevens and you say, okay, we've heard a lot about you as a great coach, and I think
creative coach,
and I think he's certainly shown himself to be one of the better, certainly the better young coaches in the league.
I would agree.
Totally different challenge now with Horford as a potential big man who can be a pivot, you know, at the high post, and you have Hayward with, you know, master not necessarily of anything but good at everything, really good to very good at everything, and then Kyrie with all the stuff that comes along with him. So I just think it's a good trade for both teams.
And in the meantime,
this worked out as well for Cleveland as you could possibly expect, and for Boston, who at some point had to go all in on.
And we
on
get
someone.
To see the first crack at it
first
opening night.
First game of the season.
It's awesome when you get to see feud potential on opening night because it's really clear LeBron and Kyrie do not like each other at all.
Doesn't seem that way. All right. We have not done this in a little while, Andy. Let's give a statue
yes!
away. In honor of Tampering Week, we have decided to give a statue to the guy we mentioned earlier in the show, who was the center of the last giant tampering scandal, Joe Smith,
yes.
who briefly did play for the Lakers. And I do mean briefly. He arrived as part of a three-team trade that sent Sasha, our boy, to New Jersey.
It was then New Jersey.
The Lakers ended up getting a couple second-round
reuniting Sasha and Jordan Farmer, who couldn't stand each other.
So good. The two second-round picks turned into Darius Morris and Robert Sacre. Joe Smith played in 12 games for the Lakers. He did not start any of them. He averaged 0.5 point per game. He scored 6 points as a Laker, 2 field goals, 2 free throws. Of the 12 games he played, in only one was the final score inside 8 points. It was 40 seconds in a game against Portland. His best game was probably, Andy, a 4-rebound game in 6 minutes in a 55-point win against Cleveland. He was +5.
Speaking, by the way, Brian, of those rebounds, if you do a deep dive into Joe Smith's numbers.
As a Laker?
Per 36, he averaged nearly 15 rebounds per game. And you and I have talked many times, Ryan, before about how Phil Jackson, his last year with the Lakers, you know, Phil seemed like somebody who regretted his decision to come back. He had to be cajoled into going for that three-peat. He didn't always seem fully engaged. We learned later there was a cancer scare, and that understandably may have, you know, played a role in him seeming sort of distant from the team. But I'm sorry, how do you keep a rebounding machine like that on the bench?
Phil was not big on analytics, Andy.
I guess not.
But Joe Smith was, I think, criminally underused.
Well, I think he's the reason they didn't
three-peat. They didn't win. Yeah.
He is the reason they got bounced against Dallas.
I was at that game in Dallas, those last two games in Dallas. And game three is memorable. I spent more time watching Phil in that game than I did watching the court because you could tell Phil knew this was it. Like, if they didn't win this game, obviously it was over and he was done. I had never seen him coach that hard.
Yeah.
He was coaching.
When he punched Powell in the chest.
Right, he was coaching his ass off to try to win.
But the good thing is it got through to Bynum.
Yeah, it did. Totally worked. all right. So we do need to give Joe Smith a statue. As people know, we've decided everybody on the Lakers deserves a statue. Just a question of where it goes.
And the size of it.
And the size. We can decide the relative importance of a player based on that.
Right. The proximity to Staples Center and the size of the statue speaks to the greatness.
Kobe, for example, gets a statue at center court.
Yes.
You just play around it.
Yes.
That's ground rules.
Which also
it's like the hill in center field at Houston.
And it's a metaphor for Kobe's career.
Yes, it is.
with the Lakers.
You just work around it.
And Joe Smith, we should mention, a very famous, really nice guy. He was a great guy.
Wonderful
in the locker
guy.
Room. Well known for his, yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
That was his response for everything.
Yes,
he used to love the hashtag, yes, sir.
Yes, he did.
I thought about Brian in playing up the retirement angle because this was Joe Smith's final team. This was his last stop in the league.
This is his swan song.
Yes. What he did with the Lakers, it didn't turn out to be a big recruiting mechanism. It was not a great free
agent. Interestingly enough,
tape.
He averaged 0.5 point a game for the 4 games he played in New Jersey, too. That is consistency.
He's a human metronome.
Yep.
I thought about playing up the retirement angle and putting the statue outside the King Solomon Home for the Elderly, which is a retirement home in the Fairfax District in L.A. that we always threaten to send mom
That's
to.
Right.
But then I
better
decided,
be nice to us.
I decided Joe Smith is too young for that. Man, by the way, you don't want to go to the King Solomon
sure,
Home
I
for
don't
the
think
Elderly.
He's Jewish enough either.
That place.
It looks run down.
Yes, it does.
It looks like it was actually erected during the life of King Solomon.
Yes, <it does. laughs>
like King Solomon was there to christen the building.
By the way,
has not been renovated since.
If the King Solomon Home ever wants to sponsor this podcast, we will talk about how wonderful the place is.
Absolutely.
That's where you want to spend your final moments.
Yes.
But then I thought about Joe Smith is really into rapping. He performs under the name Joe Beast. He's put out an album. He's got a label called
Joe Beast 95.
Nova Unit Records. Once in 2014, he freestyled a diss rap to Donald Sterling. The general consensus is it wasn't very good. So I decided...
But, in fairness, freestyling is hard.
Not if you're a professional rapper. It really shouldn't be.
But it's hard. It is hard.
Well, yes. For you and me, it's very hard.
Very hard.
For people like Joe Smith or Trudell, it shouldn't be that difficult.
Right.
So I decided to locate the statue at a club in Lincoln Heights outside downtown L.A. called the Airliner. It's off Broadway. In 2011,
you don't have to tell me where it is.
Yeah, I certainly do. In 2011,
I think I sold that.
Joe Smith's final season with the Lakers, Brian. L.A. Weekly declared. The low end theory, which was one of the nights at the Airliner, the best club in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
It was a place known for underground hip hop or undiscovered stuff. So I'm gonna go with the Airliner downtown, but instead of a statue, it's just a plaque above one of the speakers that says hashtag Yes Sir.
I mean, that's it.
That's it.
It was only there for 12 games.
Well, this is the thing. You either get it.
Or you don't, right.
Which is basically Joe Smith's career as a Laker.
Half a point a game.
So what do you got?
I have Joe Smith, I think, made his biggest impact with the media. We all thought he was great.
He was.
He was
hell of a
nice
guy.
Very nice guy. And I remember there were two or three times when Joe sort of find his way, and not just his exit interview, which was a fantastic experience, what they ask you to work on this offseason and all of that.
My freestyling?
Standard Mark Medina opening question. You know, he's in there a fair amount, and he was very charming, and we all loved him. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have a statue of Joe Smith in the old facility, wherever, they may tear the building down. I don't know what they're doing over there. But wherever it is, you take a little Joe Smith, and about half the size of the real guy, you just have him in a chair, casually talking. And so whatever they build at the old Toyota Sports Complex, there will be a statue of Joe Smith there to commemorate the largest impact that he had with the Lakers, which was talking to us.
Yeah. Do you label who he is, or do you just let people figure it out?
It's similar to yours. Either know or you don't.
By the way, final note on Joe Smith. He earned $61 million over his career, and I mean, I'm sure he's not complaining. It's a lot of money, and he's considered, no offense, kind of an underwhelming number one overall pick. So, you know, that's a nice chunk of change for his career. But to put
this
in
an underwhelming host at this, yeah. I haven't made that.
To put this in perspective, Tim Hardaway Jr., Timofey Mozgov, and Alan Crabb all out earned Joe Smith's entire career on their last deals. That's amazing. That is amazing.
It's good. It's nice.
Like Jordan Clarkson came close to that, and he was going into his third season
into
the league.
As they say, nice work of you.
Yes. Timing is everything, man.
Seriously, before we go, just want to acknowledge the fantastic series of Kobe tweets that have been coming out over the last day or so, all hashtag Mamba mentality, where he's been issuing different challenges to people like Allison Felix to, you know, something with like organizing a track team, and Kendrick Lamar to reshape some high school band program, and Isaiah Thomas to make the first team all NBA this year, which is not going to happen. And doing all this with this hashtag Mamba mentality, which is very obviously part of some sort of Nike marketing thing or whatever. And it's
something's afoot. That's what you're saying.
I am. And it's perfect for Kobe because he has evolved into this sort of shaman on a mountaintop who just sort of sends down these messages and directives to people to work and do things with, or to be visited.
You know
at
what
the
he
top
is?
Of the mountain.
He's like Zeus if Zeus wanted to go viral.
Right. But everything is very, very specifically branded too. Like he's combined commercialism and like quasi Eastern philosophy in a really fantastic way that I think suits him.
Again, we've said before, I don't know who brought it to who, But every time Pelinka speaks, he sounds like a Kobe system commercial.
He does.
And, you know, these are not unrelated events. By the way, too, happy 39th birthday to Kobe. I turned 39 yesterday. It was really weird before we go. When Kobe was in the league, and especially like his last season, when you realize like he's been in the league 20 years. And, you know, I've been in L.A. for the entirety of Kobe's career. You know, I've probably seen somewhere between 80 to 90% of his games, maybe more. So, like, Kobe's last year in the league, like, it started feeling like, my God, I'm old. Like, this guy, I remember when this guy was 17.
Right.
I feel old. But now that Kobe doesn't play anymore and he's just like a, you know, a civilian.
He's
like,
just
you,
a 39-year-old guy.
Yeah, like Kobe now being 39 in a weird way doesn't make me feel old at all. It actually kind of makes me feel younger.
And then you saw that like, picture of him like in the beaver. He's a couple pounds overweight.
Yeah,
like,
no.
I'm a guy.
Kobe now turning 39 actually makes me feel pretty good about myself.
That's excellent. Well, I'm happy for you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so this is the Lakers news, and we will be back. Theoretically, next week when they might have some more news, but we'll see.
We might find out about the tampering.
Yeah, it could take a little while. But in the meantime, they'll stay off the talk shows and all that for a little while. Probably be smart. And we will see everybody next time. Thanks.